Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey folks, welcome into the show. You're listening to Beyond the Blockchain here on FM Talk 106.5 on a Tuesday night. If you're listening live and if you're catching the podcast, we're grateful you're listening as well. Philip, how you been this week, man?
Doing fine. Just keeping this thing running.
Yeah, somebody's got to keep it between the white and the yellow, you know.
That's right.
Been a good week, you know. It's not a ton going on in crypto news, but we do have some interesting stuff we want to talk about tonight. One article that's particularly of interest to me comes from CoinDesk, and we'll talk about it after the break, but it says, shouldn't all these crypto lawyers start learning about crypto?
Yes.
And yeah, so that strikes a chord with me being I guess you would call me a crypto lawyer. So yes. That's interesting. And there's another story we want to talk about. It says Franklin Templeton, who, you know, is one of the largest financial services providers in the country.
Yes.
The CEO of Franklin Templeton says, all ETFs, which we've talked about before, the exchange-traded funds, and mutual funds will be on the blockchain. That's pretty interesting. Basically admitting to what or projecting to what we talk about all the time, that these things will be on the blockchain. And it's just third-party confirmation, third-party affirmation of what we believe. Like, if you want to have security and transparency, the blockchain is where you do it. It's this beautiful, unique combination of transparency and security.
And that's a financial institution that's not cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Franklin Templeton, they're the guys that I think are, you know, on Fox News selling you gold bars and stuff. You know, it's like they're very conservative, very conservative group. Yeah. So those will be two interesting stories that we can talk about. Beyond the blockchain, been watching a couple of new shows we can talk about as well.
Yeah.
We don't have to get into that just yet. But I'm telling you what, there's some good stuff out there.
A lot.
The ability of streaming TV to create shows that would never have been created in just the old world of, you know, three stations and a radio show. I mean, it's amazing. It's kind of like streaming TV is to TV what podcasting has become to radio, you know.
And cable, as it was transitioning into streaming, forced networks like ABC to put things like Lost on that would never have been – that would never have dreamed of putting – I mean, even the X-Files is not quite so far as Lost goes, I think. And although I guess it started with shows like the X-Files, but they really –
and networks, ABC, I mean, HBO kind of started pushing the envelope. Right, like in the 90s,
Wire.
The Wire and The Sopranos and some of that, and they could get a little dicier in content the FCC couldn't regulate over the airwaves, and then streaming is just kind of taking that to a new level. But you know, that fits in with the show. It's about innovation. We talk about blockchain technology and why it matters to you. Okay, it's innovation. So My favorite quote on innovation is Walt Disney said, creativity is thinking new things, but innovation is doing new things. And so he used to always focus his Imagineers on the doing, on the innovation. How do we do these new things? It's one thing to draw them out. It's entirely different to actually do them. And I think that's what's going on with blockchain technology right now.
You remember the show Bones? Not Zooey Deschanel, but what's her sister's name on Bones?
Mm-hmm.
She said it said something that the networks had required in the X-Files. You could see fell prey to it on the pilot episodes. The female lead has to get scantily clad. Mm. And if you watch all those shows in the X-Files, sure enough, they make Jillian get scantily clad as she's freaking out because she thinks a mosquito bite is an alien probe because you know Fox has really gotten into
formula.
Mulder's really gotten into her head, and so she thinks – you know, and sure enough, and then on Bones, same thing, some other reason to get her scantily clad. And if you watch those shows, the female lead in the pilot episode has to get scantily clad.
That was the formula. That's what people thought you had to do. Good news is, now with streaming, you can do whatever you want to do. You know, you can start creating content in niche categories for people that want to consume it. This is what the internet has done. It's what podcasting has done.
But no cheap shots if you don't have to.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if it makes sense, you know, and if the actors want to do it and the producers want to do it and everybody's in line with it, you know. There was a really good quote from this actress the other day about her having scenes that were kind of scandalous, and how did she feel about that? And she was like, I was a producer on the show. I knew what I was getting myself into. You know, I made those decisions for myself. And you know, that's what innovation is, people getting to make those decisions to protect themselves and not get taken advantage of someone else. When we come back on Beyond the Blockchain, we're going to talk about two interesting articles. We're going to talk about ETFs and mutual funds being on the blockchain. And shouldn't all these crypto lawyers start learning about crypto? Of course they should. When we come back.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, how you doing, folks? Welcome back into the show on a Tuesday. Oh, man, we're having a good time like we always do. And before the break, we talked about some headlines. And I got to tell you, during the break, I think Philip and I got some ideas for Beyond the Blockchain. We got some thoughts, man. It could be a wild show. But before we get there, let's go into this article from CoinDesk. And this is particularly interesting to me, being an attorney and into crypto and a crypto attorney. Mm-hmm. And it says, this is an opinion article. It's important to know that. Shouldn't all these crypto lawyers start learning about crypto? The industry should expect its legal experts to effectively articulate how these innovative technologies are driving changes in how we understand money, privacy, and governance. Great point. Great headline there. The question seems almost rhetorical. Should lawyers deeply engaged in the cryptocurrency or digital asset industry understand the technologies they are paid to represent before regulators and courts? Surprisingly, many legal professionals, including those actively tasked with navigating existential threats to the cryptocurrency industry or their crypto-wielding clients, treat cryptocurrency more as a novel curiosity than a transformative technology that requires intricate understanding and thoughtful consideration. This author goes on to say, I've listened to presentations by highly sought-after attorneys with large crypto practices, in air quotes, who charge thousands of dollars for an hour of their time and joke that they are not a crypto person. When pressed on a question about the uses of the technology during formal proceedings, they treat the practicalities of using digital assets as an irrelevant afterthought that only complicates their other arguments. This detachment between the industry and its advocates is not merely unhelpful, it's harmful. The industry tasks its lawyers with representing its interests before courts and regulators, who often need to consider the complex interplay of crypto applications and existing regulations for the first time. If these advocates are unwilling to engage seriously with what the industry is building, how can they effectively persuade a court or regulator that their legal interpretation aligns with the realities of the technology or convey the philosophical foundations upon which the broader cryptocurrency space is built? Top law firms charge thousands of dollars per hour for their services, yet too often, the senior-most partners on a case treat engaging deeply with their client's crypto business as beneath them. This attitude forces clients to rely on the hope that some crypto-native associate will step in to prevent egregious errors or inefficiencies caused by the lack of interest from those at the top. This dynamic is inefficient and can be financially and strategically costly for those navigating the complicated regulatory challenges inherent to most projects in the space. Fortunately, as crypto-native associates become more senior, the dynamics within law firms are beginning to change. Truly adept crypto lawyers have emerged at many prestigious law firms, and there are lawyers at specialized boutiques who certainly know their stuff, but this phenomenon remains surprisingly rare. The shift is crucial. As lawyers who understand and can innovate within the framework of cryptocurrency law are critical for the industry's future. A cynical response might equate demanding that a lawyer representing a crypto company have meaningful experience using cryptocurrencies to a tobacco company requiring that their lawyer smoke. But such glib comparisons reveal a misunderstanding of what cryptocurrency represents, a potential paradigm shift in how we structure society, handle value, privacy, and trust that relies on first-of-its-kind technologies to further goals that were, until recently, confined to science fiction. Lawyers are free to spend their time as they see fit, but those who believe they can coast on a superficial understanding of Bitcoin that hasn't been expanded since 2017, and an attitude that everything old is new again, will find their pool of clients diminishing as the industry progresses and demands more from them. I'm not suggesting that a lawyer needs a computer science degree to be a successful advocate, or that they must be a degen, air quotes, with their personal finances. But they should put in enough time learning about the industry and interacting with the different projects and protocols that make up the space so that they can speak authoritatively on what their clients do, how they do it, and why it matters. Sounds a lot like our slogan here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Passion is a valuable asset for any professional, particularly in an industry that evolves as rapidly as cryptocurrency does. Lawyers, wishing to stay up to speed with the continuous legal and technological changes that are characteristic of the cryptocurrency space, must engage in continuous self-study, a task that is incredibly difficult without a genuine interest in the subject matter. This isn't just about maintaining relevance, it's about providing the best possible representation for clients who rely on their attorneys to understand not just the law, but the essence of the technology they are dealing with, to ensure their advocacy considers a comprehensive understanding of the facts, rules, and circumstances at play. This author goes on to say, I get asked all the time by young lawyers or law students what they can do to start a career in crypto law. My advice is always to start using crypto and see if they believe that technologies that permit people to interact without intermediaries are important and should be protected. If so, start reading about the industry's history. And if you're still convinced this is a good thing for the world, develop expertise in the various areas of law and financial regulations that impact the field. On the other side, I get asked by non-lawyer entrepreneurs or developers what they can do to ensure their relationship with their lawyer is successful. My answer is to make sure your lawyer understands what you're trying to build and why, and to learn enough about the rules regulating your business so that you can have critical conversations with your legal team about their understanding of the law and their strategy. During conversations with young lawyers or entrepreneurs, I would be asked where they should start developing these informational skills, but I didn't have a great answer. And this guy says, I put together a resource called the Crypto Legal Handbook to address this gap and serve as a primer on cryptocurrency's technological and historical aspects, as well as a comprehensive overview of the various laws that govern the field. The author says, this text is designed to, on the one hand, spur lawyers to engage with the crypto world actively, enhancing their ability to serve as true advocates for technological advancement, and on the other hand, to provide entrepreneurs with the tools they need to understand the state of crypto regulations. The author says, I believe that most of us working in the crypto industry understand that it is more than just a niche asset class within the financial sector. The proliferation of technologies allow for a variety of peer-to-peer financial and non-financial communications is a pioneering movement capable of reshaping our understanding of money, privacy, and governance that could substantially impact how we govern our economy and society at large. He says, isn't it time we started demanding all these so-called crypto lawyers be able to effectively articulate this vision for the future? Wow. I agree with everything written here by this author. And it's the author is Justin Wales. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's spot on. Like, everything he goes into, from whether or not, you know, the attorneys understand it, to do the entrepreneurs understand when they're talking to the attorneys. Like, we have such a miscommunication problem and a communication gap, mm-hmm, between attorneys who think they understand what they understand, entrepreneurs who really know their craft and their skill. And bridging that divide is something that is getting increasingly harder as the technology gets more sophisticated.
And I was going to point out about the smoking analogy, just how you know, how that falls on its face. I mean, you can, you don't have to smoke to know that, like, the concentration of secondhand smoke, becomes less concentrated as it goes over a radius of how many feet away from the smoker and how many parts per million.
Yeah.
can get in the lung of another person, and how much is it likely or not likely to cause lung cancer, both to the user and the person breathing secondhand. I mean, I know all that. I'm not an attorney.
That's right.
I can imagine that there's an attorney working against the tobacco lobby or for the tobacco lobby that knows all of that.
Anyone who was alive in the 80s and remembers the concept of a smoking section and a non-smoking section in a restaurant understands that math, right? If you were in the smoking section, you got completely consumed by the smoke. If you were in the non-smoking section, you just got a lot of the smoke. Even non-smoking section wasn't smoke-free. It was just, you just can't smoke directly on top of me while I'm trying to eat my taco.
Right. You know? And that could happen to cryptocurrency. It could wind up being so concentrated that everybody is going to get something from it.
That's right.
Like secondhand smoke, secondhand cryptocurrency is going to affect everything.
It's like one of the best analogies somebody ever gave me about a smoking section and non-smoking section was, in a pool, you don't have a peeing section and a non-peeing section. Right? You're all in the same pool together.
And as the ecosystem of currency and economics changes, you're not going to be able to avoid cryptocurrency.
We're all in the same financial system together, so we got to understand what's going on. So, I thought that was a really good article, and I'm going to share it on the Facebook page and on Twitter, and we'll make sure that people see it out there. And you know, like I said, I'm particularly interested in it because I am a quote unquote crypto lawyer amongst other types of work, but it's something that really needs to be thought about and considered. And you know, there's other industries that are similar. I mean, you have generalists in the law that can do just about anything. You know, the beauty of a law degree is you can practice any type of law you want. You know, if you want to do a murder trial one day and a divorce case the next day, the law allows that. If you were practicing medicine, you wouldn't be doing oncology one day, obstetrician the next day, and neurosurgery the third.
But they talk about that a lot. People in the medical industry talk about the problems with not enough cross-discipline, that there needs to be more cross-discipline among these specialists. They need to break down the walls of
specialization.
Specialization, yeah, that's it.
That's what House was all about, right?
Yeah.
House was able to remember that show, House MD?
Oh, yeah.
He was able to break down the wall. He just kind of understood every different thing. And I guess he was a pathologist, right? And so he was doing the diagnoses. But he understood all the different varieties and disciplines of medicine and was able to bring that together. That was a great show, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Sure was.
How long did that one run? Several seasons.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely ran at least 6 or 7 seasons. It was definitely around for a while.
That's a good run.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good run. I'm surprised I haven't seen that pop up on streaming yet. Because I would go rewatch those, I think. It freaked me out the first time I realized that he was British. He has such a good American accent.
Yeah.
And then Hugh Laurie. That's who it is. I heard Hugh Laurie doing something else. Maybe it was an interview or something. I was like, House is British.
Yes.
It totally threw me for a loop.
And then there's like American actors like James Marsters, who played Spike on Buffy, who does such a flawless British accent.
Really?
He just, you know, you can't believe. At first, if you don't know he's an American actor and you've seen that for the first time, you think he's British.
That's what makes actors good, man. The guy that plays Charles Vane on Black Sails, he's an American.
Yeah.
Charles Vane sounds like a Brit. Which, by the way, I finished that show. Oof, brutal. If you haven't watched Black Sails on Netflix, it's about the golden era of piracy in Nassau in the Bahamas. And it's loosely based on, it's mostly based on the real pirates, but it's also loosely based on Treasure Island and Long John Silver and Stevenson's versions of those things. So definitely a show you should watch. One of the reasons I liked that show and I started it also was it's capped at 4 seasons and it's already been in the can. So I knew what I was getting myself into. I was like, okay, I know I got 4 seasons to consume and the story will conclude itself, you know? So
Yeah, evil is capped at 4, I think, and from is capped at 5.
See, I haven't seen From, but we're going to talk about evil after the break because that one is, that one's wild. Real wild. That's a good topic for Beyond the Blockchain.
Yes, it is.
Well, you know what? I hope that, you know, this kind of movement of educating lawyers sticks. I think it's good for the crypto industry. I think it'll be good for the entrepreneurs that are trying to build inside the blockchain. And it'll be good for the attorneys that are trying to learn it as well. So, you know, we'll see how that goes from here. When we come back on Beyond the Blockchain, we're going to talk a little more about ETFs, how they're going to get on the blockchain, according to Franklin Templeton. And then beyond the blockchain, where Philip and I just talk about whatever is moving us at the moment.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back into Beyond the Blockchain. We're here for the second half of the show. Philip, we had a good first half of the show, I thought. We gave some headlines, talked a little bit about what was going on, talked about the legal field with cryptocurrency and, you know, how that needs
lacking.
To be lacking. Now I want to talk about Franklin Templeton, who is one of the leading financial services provider in the country. The CEO says that all ETFs and mutual funds will be on the blockchain.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about this real quick. It's a short article here from Cointelegraph. It says, Jenny Johnson, the president and CEO of Franklin Templeton, a financial firm with $1.6 trillion in assets under management, recently reiterated her pro-blockchain stance during an interview with Bloomberg. Among the hot topics discussed, Johnson had plenty to say on tokenization and generative AI. When asked how Franklin Templeton benefited from tokenization, Johnson quickly replied, first of all, I'm a huge fan of blockchain and the technology. She described a situation where the company ran a side-by-side experiment to process account records using both traditional methods and blockchain for a period of 6 to 8 months. As Johnson put it, the results were quite positive. We were astonished by how much less costly it was to run it on the blockchain. That's what we know, right? We talk about that all the time. She says, it's a very efficient technology, and we think it's going to open up a lot of new investment opportunities. And honestly, eventually, I think ETF and mutual funds are all going to be on the blockchain. She attributed this prediction to the huge cost associated with verifying data between disparate systems, a problem that blockchain was intentionally designed to solve. Johnson further pointed out that financial institutions and stakeholders still need to verify data between external parties once data is reconciled in-house. The monetary and temporal savings can lead to more diversified investment opportunities, according to Johnson. She cited the use case of pop superstar Rihanna, who released a series of 300 NFTs that afforded their owners a tiny percentage of royalties for one of the artist's songs via smart contract. This is a reference Johnson's made in the past. As Cointelegraph reported back in October 2023, the CEO relayed the Rihanna story during an interview with CNBC's Delivering Alpha. I think this is really important. I think that, you know, as more financial institutions start to take this stance, and clearly the CEO here is making a public statement and has made one of October of last year. It's when the way you're going to get mass adoption is when people don't even realize they're using the blockchain. If you're just logging into your app of your bank or your financial institution or your 401k provider or whoever it is,
or your video hosting website,
or your video hosting website or YouTube or your streamers or whatever, or you're purchasing things on Amazon using an Amazon token that just feels like you're using your Amazon account, that's when adoption is going to start to skyrocket. And the more people have this conversation, the faster that adoption is going to take place.
And PayPal. You can have PayPal and other
any of the sources. Payment providers.
And
yeah.
What's a Venmo?
Venmo. Venmo's already started to move that direction. Apple Pay and Google and everybody else. I mean, everyone is going to move this direction. And, well, honestly, they already are. I mean, they all have internal systems that are building these protocols, that are developing, that are training them, that are testing them. And they're all just trying to see who's going to be the first to release it, if it's successful. Nobody, they're all kind of sitting on the ledge of, do I want to be the first one out, you know, into those deep waters. But it's coming sooner than later, and it's coming regardless of how you feel about it. That's what I try and tell people a lot too, right?
Yes.
Regardless of how you feel about blockchain technology, it is coming.
Sure.
You can either learn about it, you can get to know it, you can understand what it is, or you cannot. It's completely your decision. But in the 90s, there were people that said, I'm not going to learn about a computer because I'm too old. And you know what? I don't care about computers and I don't care about the internet. And now those people are 80 years old and they're emailing their grandchildren, or they're on Facebook writing comments that don't make sense because they don't know how Facebook works, but God love them. At least they're engaging in it, you know?
Well, I didn't even get on the computer until, I did on other people's computers, but I didn't get a computer of my own or an email account or something like 2003, because I was actually paranoid about computers, about the invasion of privacy. Like back then, I was paranoid about it. And eventually I took the dive, the plunge, and got a computer and, you know, had already had an email and just went with it.
Yeah, I had to get an email address when I started college, but it wasn't until I was in law school that they said, you have to check your email because it's a formal version of communication.
Right.
Like when I was an undergrad, you had an email address, but like if you didn't check it, it wasn't like the university held you accountable for not checking your email. It was just another way of getting in touch with you.
And yet there were big city corporations that were using email back in the 80s, and they did send, you know, basic text documents, officially binding text documents and information to each other in the primitive emails.
Yeah, I started law school in 2006. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, email had been around quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just now saying, this is an official form of communication.
Yeah.
If you don't respond to this, that's on you.
Right.
It was pretty wild. Mm-hmm. We knocked around a little bit during the break about Beyond the Blockchain. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple things go around. But then I feel like we caught a vibe on this show, Evil.
Yes.
Dude. I started watching it on Netflix. It is some kind of weird. It's good. Weird.
Well, you know what's evil is when people deepfake, and you can use the blockchain to store videos, whether it's an episode of Evil or a personal video that you made, and prevent it.
That's so interesting because, you know, that happens in Evil. There's this episode where...
That's right.
Not to get into all the details, but there's... this show Evil is basically about a priest in training and a psychologist and a technologist who's a skeptic that are hired by the Catholic Church to investigate whether something should be an exorcist or whether something should be a miracle, or can it be explained by natural phenomenon by science. And in one of these episodes, they use deepfake technology. So during the break, we were talking about this and just kind of knocking it around. I said, you know, this is where the blockchain comes in. If I record an episode of this show and upload it to the blockchain and say this is an authentic version of this show, and you tried to deepfake our show, we would be able to say, well, that's not an authentic version of what we have, because we have a non-transferable, immutable version that we've already uploaded to the show. Now, could they always take... But we've done this show almost 200 episodes. I don't know, at least 100 episodes. Have we said enough words where they could deepfake the words that we've said to create a narrative?
Store all our episodes on blockchain.
Yeah, possibly. But if all of our episodes are on the blockchain, it would be easy to refute the technology by saying, no, here's the accurate representation of what was said, and here's the transaction date. Here's the immutable ledger, And then that deep fake becomes less credible.
Exactly.
Does it stop it from spreading virally? No, it doesn't. But it at least gives you a backstop. And that's somewhere that I don't know that blockchain technology has really, I'm sure people far smarter than me have thought about this already, but it's something that we haven't talked about on the show. But refuting deep fakes is something that is concerning to me, because as we get into this political season even deeper, all you're going to see is more like hyperbolic language, more extremism.
The court cases, any court like case.
Everything that goes on.
Court testimony.
You know, social media and the internet drives passion. And when it drives passion, it drives people one direction or the other. And if it's not true, then that's harmful to democracy. It's harmful to the future of America. So being able to accurately determine what is true, what is real, and what is not is immensely important to me and should be to all of our listeners as well.
Watermark your audio and your video, which is what this is. It's just like a blockchain watermark on whatever you're, you know, even, you know, still photographs, you know, and images and all of that.
Right. That's a great way of using an analogy to say what it is. It's kind of watermarking, you know, what you're doing. But I think we've got to be really concerned about, you know, Donald Trump kind of coined the phrase fake news.
Yeah.
But now we need to think about like fake data, fake video, yes. Fake audio, fake. You can't just trust that what you see and hear is something that actually happened and that person actually said it. And that becomes quite frightening. Beyond the dystopian shows that we talk about here on Beyond the Blockchain, these are real life things that exist and may have a real life outcome on, you know, the future of our country. And so it's something to think about. I don't think I have all the answers, certainly, but
you gotta dig in.
We gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, you gotta start. Yes,
we gotta start somewhere.
Yes,
and maybe blockchain technology is part of that solution. And
sure, sounds like it.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, it's the best option I can come up with on how you verify and authenticate anything. Might as well have video and audio as part of that authentication and verification.
Yeah. And still, it sounds like you said, it's the best idea, I think, so far.
We'll see. I don't know if anybody's listening to us, but they should.
Yes.
All right, folks, when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain, we may go beyond the blockchain. We just may stick with the blockchain. I don't know. We'll see in a minute.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Beyond the Blockchain. I'm here with Philip on a Tuesday night. Tuesday. And, you know.
What's that saying with the guy?
Sketch, man. Sketch. He's internet famous. And if you don't know who Sketch is, ask somebody under the age of 30, and I promise you they do.
It's also time to talk with Scott on a Tuesday.
It's time to talk to Scott on a Tuesday. All right. We've been messing around, teasing beyond the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tell me about, so I told you, I watched this show, A Man in Full, on Netflix. It's like 6 episodes. I don't really want to give it away. I don't really know a good way to tease it, except it's like if Donald Trump was an Atlanta real estate investor and the drama associated with bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You should watch it. But let's move on. The show Evil.
Yes.
First of all, the name gives me a little pause because I like positivity, right? Like I like things that make me happy. This one, that's a whole totally different world.
The string quartet and the black and white, the intro, you know, the intro, but the show theme, that's
awesome. Pretty phenomenal. Yeah. So I'm only 7 episodes into the first season. I think you've seen more than I have. It's got Michael Emerson in it, who is in Lost.
That's right.
Who's Linus. You remember the guy I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
He is phenomenally creepy.
Yes, he is. Just like in Lost.
Just like in Lost. But this show is really interesting. Like we talked about before the break, it's a weird combination of the show's main protagonist are this guy who's training to be a priest, a psychologist who is trying to apply science, and a technologist who is trying to debunk any kind of spiritual presence using, you know, technology. And they're hired by the Catholic Church to investigate both demonic possessions and miracles with the hopes of debunking every... It's like, it seems like at least the church is trying to debunk all of them in the opportunity to prove any of them. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And Ben is our friend
Ben
from Lost.
Linus. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I could not remember his name. That's gonna bother me that I could not pull that out of the recesses of my brain.
You remembered his last name though.
I did remember his last name. But the show is really good. I think it's interesting. I think it's on Netflix right now. It's streaming in the top 10. So if you go to your homepage, you should see it streaming. Maybe it's just streaming in mine because it's kind of like TikTok's For You page. I don't know if Netflix does that. Do you know if Netflix gives different people different top 10s?
I don't know. You're talking about like For You, like guessing what your top 10 favorite movies
are? So like on TikTok, your For You page is what they think you're interested in.
Yeah.
So my question is, when Netflix does it, these are the top 10 streaming the shows. Mm-hmm. Is it the top 10 streaming shows I'd be interested in, or is it the top 10 streaming across the platform?
I'm sure it's two different lists, one for you and one for the whole platform.
Maybe. I'm kind of okay with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am okay with the platform understanding what I like and feeding me more of the things I like.
It's like trending. This is trending and these are for you.
Right.
Like on Twitter it says that. This is for you and this is what's trending.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like I'm kind of okay with that. You know? Like yeah. I'm okay with using my data to give me something I'm actually interested in.
Right. Well, it's locked into the website. It's the data in the website and data from the website. It's all use, you know, user and user end and it's, you know.
It's amazing. I know people mm-hmm. don't want to share their data, and that's fine. I get it. You got to be careful how you share your data and where. But, man, give me things I like.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
If I'm watching a football game, only give me advertisements I might be interested in. Don't give me stuff I'm not interested in. You're just wasting your money. At that point, you're wasting your advertising dollars. I guarantee you if on this radio show we could micro-target our radio ads based on what people were interested in.
Yeah.
Sean would be like, yeah, let's do that.
I'm sure he's trying to figure out ways to do it. I mean,
oh, well, terrestrial radio is hard for that.
We have streaming and podcasts. And he's always working. You know,
oh, yeah. Yeah. But guarantee, you know. I mean, and why wouldn't you be happy about that? I would be like, wow, thank you for giving me exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, that's like you go to a music website and so they advertise guitars, albums, artists. It's all music, of course. That's what you came for.
That's what you came for.
Yeah.
And like what do you think people come to this show for?
Well, and again,
our wit and intellect. Devastating good looks.
Well, I don't know about good looks, but we have wit and intellect. We got all of that. We got information. We're informative.
We are informative.
Oh, yeah.
We tell them about blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to them.
And it does. I mean, it matters in so many different ways. We've already discussed it, how you can watermark all your audio and video.
Keep you away from the deepfakes.
And also how you do protect your data. Like you said, with you gatekeep who gets any of your data, whether it's Netflix or a medical association or an insurance company. I mean— all that stuff ties together.
It's only going to get more sophisticated also.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't wait for the day when my medical data is on the blockchain and I can release certain data to certain organizations to use it for medical research and they pay me for my data. Like, great. Why would I not want to get paid for my data? I mean, that only makes sense. And I get to choose. And if I don't want to, I don't have to. I just keep it locked up forever. And no one's the wiser.
That's like, it.
What's wrong with all that?
Yep. It's better than having everyone else profit off your data and you don't get a dime for it and they do.
I mean, that's certainly happening now.
That it is.
I mean, the pharmaceutical company is making a gajillion dollars off of you.
That it is.
Between pharma and big tech, I mean, everybody's making a gajillion dollars off all your data.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty creepy to think about just how much of your data they have and how quickly they do guess at where you're going, where you've come from, where you're headed next.
Look, all you got to do is get on your maps and they'll be like, did you mean to go here? You're like, well, no, I did not. They're like, well, you frequently go here, so we just thought you meant to, you know, actually go here. You're like, not today. Thank you, though.
Yeah, there was something that just popped up. Like I mentioned on Facebook, Robert Heinlein's book, Tunnel, what was that? Oh, man, now I can't even think of it. What is that? Anyway, I mentioned a Robert Heinlein book to somebody, and immediately the Heinlein Society showed up on the Facebook feed.
Well, look, all you got to do is keep your phone around you and whatever you talk about. You talk about a Caribbean vacation, next thing you know, you got a Caribbean vacation advertisements on your phone. So, you know, that's happening all the time. And we just got to be ready for it. And, you know, embrace technology, do the best we can, and
make the best of it. Tunnel in the sky.
Tunnel in the sky. I'm not familiar with that one yet.
I first read that when I was a kid. It's aimed towards, you know, a young adult audience, but it's brilliant. It's, you know, their kind of young adult audience that they were aiming for.
Sure.
Might as well be a mature adult audience.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Well, you know, maybe that's something we can elaborate on next week.
But anyway, and that, like you're saying, the algorithms, typed in, you know, you mentioned Tunnel in the Sky to somebody on a page, and then there in my feed comes the Heinlein Society.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, now everybody that listens to this show is going to start getting the same advertisements if they've got their phone around them.
Oh, that's
right. If you're in your car listening to the show, your phone is listening to you. You're going to get some of these advertisements. Maybe next week people can let us know.
Yeah.
Did you get a weird advertisement that you never expected based on
what we talked
about during the show? That's be interesting. All right. Let's get some of that information next week. We'll see you next week on Beyond the Blockchain.